and Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, brought to you by Finance It in Studio. What's happening, Bob?
Hey, boys, how you doing?
All good.
We're doing pretty well. Always trying to find his way down to the Super Bowl. Do you have any connections with the NFL or in Minnesota?
He may know somebody, but he may go.
No, I'm not going.
Or maybe Mike or Sean.
When you say connections, you want to go for free?
I would prefer that.
Yeah, well,
no chance.
I don't have connections.
I've got connections.
I mean, I'll pay, I don't want to pay $3,700 per ticket.
Yeah, I don't know. I always tell people when if you do have an in for tickets, it's always bad form to ask how much the ticket is. So you just got to kind of like, you put your request in and then they come back and they give you what they got. Then whatever the price tag is, then you're kind of on the hook for it.
That happened to me.
You know the drill is?
Well, that happened to me in the finals, which is fine because I knew I was playing. But when I first started with TSN, the game in Vancouver, game 7 against Boston, had a buddy on the Bruins. I said, can you leave me two? He's like, yeah, no problem. I'll leave you mine. Those were $560 each or something.
So were you thinking they were free at the time?
No, not at all. I knew I was paying. I just had no idea what the ticket was. A Stanley Cup final ticket. And like, they're not giving these away.
Yeah,
I took two. I think they were $565 each. They were great seats, lower bowl. And I watched Timmy Thomas just put a clinic on.
And like, then you ran for your life.
Yeah, you weren't getting a pee, but they could still be playing. They wouldn't have scored that night. He was unreal that night. But yeah, it was a good over 1,100.
Well, and the riots afterwards, I don't even remember the details of the game. Like, the only thing I can remember is the riots.
4-0. I think they lost 4-0.
I think they probably did. I don't know. But you mentioned Tim Thomas's play. I don't remember that at all.
He was unreal. But, I mean, it's so funny when you look back on that. Luongo got rinsed. They didn't score a goal. Like, it's funny how Bobby Lou was kind of run out of town there.
Brad Marchand was so good that game.
Marchand, do you remember, was it a couple games before Marchand had roughed up one of the Sedins? And there was no reaction whatsoever. Exactly. And that was one of my buddies who played for the Bruins that said, they were down in the series 3-2, and he said to me after the game, we got them. We got these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They went back and won game 6 and then won.
Well, they won game 6 big too, didn't they? Wasn't it like 8-0 or something like that? It was bad.
Rinsing, and then they went back and won 4-0.
Anyway,
I always remember that for game 7 before we were across the way and some place, I forget what it was.
It's like Olympic Gardens.
It was like it was some place that had a nice setup so that when we did the panel, the rink and across the water was the rink and everything else looked really cool. And there was a lot of glass doors everywhere. And we were like less than 5 minutes to air. And they said, okay, come on, we got to get ready. And so Ray Ferraro had just finished getting some makeup done. And Ray literally sprinted towards the set. And there was a glass wall and poor Ray hit that thing hard. And he blew his nose wide open, man. He broke his nose, or if he didn't break it, it was close to it. And poor Ray. And so then we had we're literally a minute or two to the hit, and Aaron Ward was there, and he was ready. He was supposed to just go on for That's Hockey at 7 o'clock, whatever. And so we had to throw him into the seat in a moment's notice. And there was I always remember Dregs, of course. Dregs goes in. There was a picture of, there was literally an imprint of Ray's face. It looked like the Chicago Blackhawk logo on the glass where the makeup of his face had hit his nose had turned sideways. So it looked like a profile. And Dregs was taking pictures and tweeting it out. So.
Ray would have handled that so well, too. And that's
he actually was a trooper. He knows how to play hurt. And he came back and did the late hit that night.
He did the late hit that night.
He's got, his nose is out this. He's got two black eyes. He's got tape. And
I got a phone call from Jeff Mock because I was there, too. And he said, can you go back to the hotel and get your suit because Ray got hurt. We may need
and
you.
And you said, no, I'm drunk.
I was like, no, I'm 5 beers deep and a couple of vodkas. I'm like, hey. He goes, well, you know what? He goes, stop drinking, and then we'll see.
By then, you'll be okay.
Like, no,
that's TSN standard. That's great.
I mean, but I was done my work for the day, so I'd been drinking. Like, that was it. I was gonna sit back and be a fan and enjoy myself. And I had a late lunch with Michael Landsberg, and a couple drinks, not him, but me, and was enjoying myself.
He doesn't drink, and you're just sitting there nailing back cocktails.
At a breakfast place, I had like pancakes and beer, I think.
That's sober up, we might need you tonight.
That's what I got the call on.
That's what you want to hear.
Oh, well. That happens. Anyways,
we've been talking about the Leaf game last night, and obviously people are focused on the non-goal that we all think was a goal. Ultimately, it was irrelevant because Matthews scored the next shift anyway. But goaltender interference, like, this has always been the problem for me, Bob, is that I walk away as confused as I was when I first saw it.
And maybe this is because I'm a nerd, and I talk to...
Come to the show on Friday.
What show is that?
Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, Masters and Siegel are going to be in here. Oh,
very good. I'll take a pass. I was watching it, and my initial reaction very quickly when I looked at it was, this is going to count. And the reason I thought it was going to count is because there's a real simple principle involved. And if the puck is in the crease, then the player, the attacking player, is entitled to go in and get it. And if in the process of going in to get that loose puck, he makes contact with the goalie, as long as it's not like, you know, as long
egregious.
As you drill him into the net.
Right.
But that's a goal. That is a goal. And that's what I initially thought. I said, okay, this is going to be a goal because the puck was already in the crease. And so Matthews' contact with the goalie is incidental, and he's entitled to that puck. And if he roughs up Bernier a little bit, so be it. That's hockey. And then I watched the replay a little closer, and what I realized was that when the contact was made, the puck was, if it was in the crease, it hadn't gone in yet. So in other words, the contact, whether it was initiated by Bernier or not, it doesn't even matter, because once you're in the blue and there's no puck clearly in the crease, that goalie's going to get the call 99% of the time.
See, my thing, Bobby, was they always say the goaltender's got to be allowed to do his job.
Yeah.
But well, when the puck went behind Bernier, Bernier was looking at his family and friends in the front row, and it was like he didn't even make an attempt to do his
job.
Right,
but here's the thing. He was physically taken out of the play before that puck got behind him. If that puck was behind him and Matthews kind of careened through him to get to the puck and put it in, I'd agree with you 100%. But the rules as I understand them, as soon as I saw that, and I saw that
the overhead,
the very first contact that Matthews and Bernier made, it wasn't to get a loose puck in the crease. It was just to establish position.
I love how Babb said half the coaches text him.
You know what the coaches are? I'm doing them even...
Half of them. Half of them don't even like him enough to text
I find
him.
That hard to believe myself.
You'd be surprised how quick the coaches...
union?
I've got the mid-season... I'm doing a mid-season coaches poll. Bunch of stuff. You know, mid-season award winners, who will win the cup type thing. Results will be out in a couple of days. But one of the questions... two of the questions that I was asking... And I was asking before, I put it out like a day or two ago, so it was before last night's game, is goalie interference coach's challenge. Keep it, can it, or modify it? And then I did the same thing, offside coach's challenge, keep it, can it, or modify it. It's interesting. So far I got 23 responses, so there's only 8 to go, and I hope to get most of those before the week is out. Of the 23 guys... And I'm trying to do this from memory because I don't have the sheet in front of me. But on the offside, they really hate the offside challenge.
Can it? A lot?
There are two guys that want to keep it. There were like seven, eight guys that want to can it entirely. And then there were like 14 or whatever that want to modify it. And then there are, on the goalie interference, it's a little more even. There, I think there were 11 of the 23 want to keep it. Two want to can it, and most of them want to modify it. And the modification that most of the coaches want to make is they want to take it back out of the referee's hands. They don't want the referee making the call. They want hockey ops in Toronto making the call.
So just call goal, and then just say go to Toronto.
And then if there's a challenge, then let the hockey ops guy do it. They think there'll be more consistency from things. See, because I will say this in defense of the referees. When we brought in goalie interference... And there's always a perception, if you're going to go to video review, then you're going to get it right 100% of the time or 99% of the time. This is still a subjective thing. It's not black and white. It's a referee deciding, he being forced to check his work. And it's up to the referee to decide, do I want to change my mind or do I want to stick with my ruling? And so it's just another call in the game. And every referee call over the course of a game is highly subjective.
How do you think the refereeing community would have reacted to Matthews, his goal celebration last night? I thought it was brilliant. I love that.
I thought
kind
it was fantastic.
Stuff.
And you know what?
But refs can get pretty...
Yeah, they could. But you know what? They shouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, he's being emphatic and...
passionate.
And I thought it was really cool. The photograph of the referee pointing and Matthews right near
right at the same time.
It'd be awesome to be one of those people's faces on the glass for like a memento for your baseball.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. It was. I thought it was a great moment, and especially because when they disallowed it, he gave the eye roll like, oh no.
Yeah,
and the next shift out, he scores and it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
That to me is what sports is all about.
Exactly.
That's the fun stuff that we should enjoy about it, and I can't imagine that referees would be too upset by it, and if they are, that's their problem, I think, not anybody else's.
There's been so much focus on Vegas and how surprising that story's been this year, and it speaks for itself. They're first overall on January 23rd or 24th. It's incredible. But that's not the only shock. I mean, Colorado's won 10 games in a row. Mm-hmm. They barely won 10 games all of last year. They were horrific a year ago. Erik Karlsson is an absolute disaster right now. Yep. McDavid and Crosby, neither of them in the top five. Philly lost 10 games in a row. They've battled back and they're into a playoff spot. Like, it's been a wild ride this season.
It really has. Like, when you're talking about the best players in the game, and I'm doing midseason award coaching polling right now, and I mean, it's not Crosby and McDavid and Karlsson who are getting the best player votes. It's Nathan MacKinnon and Nikita Kucherov and Patrice Bergeron and the top defenseman is not Karlsson. Doughty's getting a lot of support, but so is Hedman and some of the other guys. So it's a fascinating year from that perspective, and it's really across the board. The great teams aren't as great as they have been in the past. The good teams this year are surprising, and the great players aren't as great as they have been.
Of all the teams that suck, whether that be Ottawa, Chicago, Montreal, Edmonton. When do you think these teams publicly will come out and say, this year is a write-off? For almost all the I just mentioned, it is. But when do they come forward and say,
some of them need to start planning for next year? Some of them never will actually come out and publicly say it, but they'll do it with actions. So, you know, as you get closer to the trade deadline, you see who's selling, who they're selling, and so,
Has anybody ever come out and said we're done?
Well, what's John Chyka gonna say if you got him on the spot and said, "Are you done?"
You're literally asking somebody to go.
I hear you, but
they've been done since the first month of the season,
right?
Yeah, those because
the hole they dug themselves was so deep.
But Chicago is in uncharted territory from the past decade. Like, they are in a weird spot. Like, they're
last in their division.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they keep falling further, and they're getting spanked.
Well, they're losing. Again,
that's their problem.
Show me bad goaltending.
That's right, but like it doesn't matter. The goaltending's not there.
That's where they are.
So they're out of it, more than likely. Now, maybe they got a big run in them.
Well,
I don't know.
You never know. They could have a run. You know, Crawford started to skate again.
I don't buy into the narrative. Like if L.A. would have sold off everything this summer because they had a bad season last year, they wouldn't be where they are now. Like I say, Quick missed 59 games. Doughty had a bad season. Kopitar had a bad season.
Well, Jamie, usually I would say for the Blackhawks, it might be good for them to kind of miss the playoffs.
Right.
Much like in L.A., rest, kind of retool, regroup. But they kind of did that last year. They got thumped 4 straight by Nashville.
Yeah. 8 days into the playoffs, they were on the course.
That's right. So it's not like they had an extended...
And you've got such a high bar, and, you know, you've got ownership and... The hierarchy above Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville that are like, no, we are not missing the playoffs. Find a way to get us in there.
Well,
I got news for you. You are.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, they're 9 points back of St. Louis.
If Jeff Glass...
What is it for the wild card, though?
I think they're... Let me find it right here. They are 7 out of a wild card.
And how many games in hand do they have?
They
none.
They don't. Colorado's got a game in hand on them.
How many teams do they have to climb over?
Anaheim, LA, Minnesota, and then Colorado and Dallas are the wild card.
But you know what? Like, seven's a lot to make up, especially in the world of 3-point games. But I'm just saying, that's a rollable situation. That if a team did get on a roll, and some of these other teams, because here's the thing, Colorado's full value. Give them full credit for what they've done. But they're in the wild card spot right now, and they've won 10 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when they don't win 10 in a row? What happens if they play 500 hockey for a little bit? Is there somebody behind them? Minnesota hasn't gone on a roll yet. They've had a lot of injuries.
Anaheim's had a weird season, too.
Anaheim dealt with a lot of injuries in the first half of the season. You've got some teams right behind you there that are capable of winning like 8 of 10. And if you get a team like that, combined with somebody else who goes to 500, you do start to make up 7 points fairly quickly.
Well, Pittsburgh's that version on the other side of the league, right? Yeah. In the East, where they're technically out of a playoff spot right now, but
they're only like 2 points out.
They're tied with the Rangers. It's just New York's got a game in hand on them, but their 5-on-5 stats have been terrible this year.
But it's the league is so jammed.
It's
up.
It's a weird year.
And the flip side of that is the teams that are not very good, that are going to miss the playoffs, and they're thinking about the draft, and they're thinking about the lottery, and Rasmus Dahlin, his visions of him are dancing in their head. A team loses one game on one night, and they drop like 4 spots in the draft. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Because things are that tight amongst that group of teams that are between the playoff spot and the absolute bottom of the league.
Well, think about it, though. If the Leafs played in a different conference or even in a different division...
Oh, my.
Oh, if they're in the Metro,
they'd be in deep trouble.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, that's the truth. Like, you start to look at it, like, they were sitting pretty a while ago, and they're going to be fine because of the division that they play in. But if they were anywhere else, this is a middle-of-the-road team.
That's the truth. I think that's likely true because they would play those teams more. But that said, the actual numbers, they'd be second in the Metro right now with 57 points. Now, teams behind them would have games in hand,
but there would be heat, without question.
But it's not like if they moved over, all of a sudden they'd be the worst team in the league.
Right now, their playoff spot is virtually guaranteed because Montreal, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo, Florida have been
so bad,
running from not very good to totally inept.
Mm-hmm. Bottom 7 and 8. In the league, all of them. It's incredible. Like I can't recall the last time we saw a division like this so top heavy with Tampa and Boston, and even the Maple Leafs being included.
And then the rest are done.
Central.
Yeah, Chicago's in last. They got 50 points.
Yeah.
All right, Bob.
All right, boys.
Good seeing you.
Thank you.
There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with
Finance It.